Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Let's go.
Ask me what I did this morning, guys.
I'm going to answer it for you. No. I did yoga. I watered my plants.
No.
Went for a run.
I went for my yearly run.
Your yearly run?
It is a special event each year.
Consistency.
Where?
Doesn't have to be every day.
Honestly, Sarah, I'm not joking. For the last 5 years, every year without fail, I have this itch to go for a run. I just go and do it. I come, and the first time it happened, I was like, I'm becoming a runner. Oh my God. This is what they mean when they mean you just break through a wall. And then I went for the run and then just didn't go again. And then every year, I just have this itch to go for a run. It's not a long one. It's just literally like, I'm literally like running around in the street and coming
back.
That
home. Makes, oh my God, that makes it last so much.
It just goes. And then every time I'm like, oh, I could do this often, but then I don't. And I do it again in a year's time.
Right, everybody, welcome back to Two Cents. If you haven't heard one of our episodes before, it goes something like this. Each episode, we each bring two subjects that we believe are overrated and two that we believe are underrated. We unpack, debate, hash them out here at the virtual roundtable and leave for our listeners to do the same. We're going to do something a little different this week. Selena and Nafisa are going first with their overrated and underrated. And I'm going to do a little something different at the end.
I've really enjoyed the energy some Muslim women are giving on the timeline about Khabib, because someone like Fatima Adash said the Khabib phenomenon would be a great case study on gender and masculinity within Muslim spaces. Absolutely gobsmacking and yet very expected what the aura of such performance of masculinity does to Muslim men. Imagine a Muslim woman in his place, they'd tear her down. And then someone else, and then someone called Tuscany Bernier at Not Your Nikabe said, I can't wait until we uplift and empower Muslim women in sports the same way we do men. Men can do sports that aren't permissible and be protected the way women never will. And that is so exhausting for some of us to see. And then someone else at Dandia Assad said, Khabib offers a fun challenge to Islamic religious study nerds. On the one hand, he practiced a sport prohibited by most interpretations of Islamic law. On the other, he's a global emblem of Muslim pride and resistance against structural Islamophobia. How to make sense of it? And then the last one is by @Sin Seriously, and she said,
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
All Khabib did was fight in a cage and y'all want to call it dawa. And she says, she wrote, Muslim man does anything, Muslims, dawa, Muslim women, breeds, Muslims, fitna. She went in, and then people were like,
why did it take this long for people to start talking about it? Because he's been like, I mean, not,
I think,
for people to talk about it, for there to be this much, like,
he's basically retired because his mum told him to.
And then someone, and then Sin Seriously also said, because people were coming back and saying, oh, but he's been so like unapologetic and blah blah blah, and she said, so what I'm hearing is ex-female athlete didn't make sajda in public, so she's not as good as Khabib. Laugh my ass off, y'all love to perform, y'all love performative piety, don't you? Where was this energy piety for people like Ibtihaj, who is covered from head to toe, to from forehead to neck, literally? Where was that energy for Olympian Muslim, black Muslim woman? And this is the thing, like, you know, I was seeing like muftis and sheikhs and all of this being like, oh, Khabib, mashallah, 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 blah, blah, blah. And I felt like a bit of a Grinch because I was sitting there going,
where is your same energy for Muslim women? And I'm allowed to say that. I feel, when I saw Omar Suleiman's tweet and I saw Mufti Meg's tweet about Khabib, I felt frustrated. Mm-hmm. I felt upset.
Yeah, but the thing is, this religious content, you know, the same way we see a trend and we're like, oh, that's a nice content piece. Imams like that.
No, they should know better. They should know better. But at the end of the day, again, it's like, I feel like we're all done with this. We need to call a spade a spade. Like, Omar Suleiman, everyone should know better. You're on a platform, you're on a standing. You know full well that Khabib shouldn't be going around in some tight underpants.
Let's call them knickers. They are knickers.
Like going around in knickers. His aura is completely uncovered and he's performing.
Getting thrashed.
You know what? I'm being mad at this podcast. I had that thought, and I, you know, I'm ashamed, but I had that thought that, you know what? Yeah, you know what he's doing is wrong, and I was thinking about halal income and how we earn, etc. I was like, but you know what? He'll use that money for good, and he'll, you know, he's listened to his mom, and he's gonna do good for his village, etc.
This isn't me judging Khabib.
Yeah, or trying to find leverage. But yeah, it's not
Khabib. It's about what Khabib represents in the Muslim community and how we engage with someone like Khabib. This is not about Khabib. Khabib, you get your bags, you wear your knickers, you do what you need to do to get your career. This isn't about Khabib, you know, it really is not. Like, mashallah, the brother, he's incredible. He's achieved so much. He is, you know, he is full of, you can see.
And he has done it with the etiquette of, yeah.
He's full of integrity. This is not about bringing Khabib into question. It never. It's about the concept as a whole and how we engage and what that means for how Muslim women are spoken about and how Muslim women are treated.
Yeah.
And it's not about me being bitter about Khabib. It's not. It's about me being frustrated about how Muslim women are treated in our community, doing just normal behavior. Yeah. Let's be honest.
So my next one, so I'm actually going to pull up an underrated, and this is essentially the crux of it, is normalizing seeing your friends once a year. So the reason why I say this is...
It's underrated to normalize seeing your friends once a year.
Yeah.
So seeing your friends once a year is underrated.
Yeah. Okay. And the reason I say this is because I saw a friend and I haven't seen her since literally last year. And we worked the same uni together, and then we also worked together after uni as well for like a year. And we always kept in touch, really close friends, always, like, she runs a business as well. And so we'd always like soundboard off each other and you know, have each other's back. And so we met up yesterday, and we were just talking. We had a right good like catch up. It was, you know, those friendships where even though you haven't seen each other in a long time, it just picks up and it's as if you saw each other last week. And we were like, oh, so we'll do this again in like a year then, yeah? And then we were like, let's be honest with each other. Like, reality is, between her working like 60 hours to get her business going and me being busy and wanting to see family and obviously lockdown, pandemics and blah, 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 I've just been thinking that actually, as I get older, I'm like, it's actually very normal. When you think about, if you've got 10 friends, to see all 10 friends, actually, otherwise you're seeing someone every week. Do you know what I mean? I don't have time to see people every week. And it was just really nice and refreshing for us to sit across the table and be like, yeah, it makes sense to do this every year. Because I think, you know, from when you're younger, a lot of your friendships are based on proximity. Like, you live in the same area, you go to school together, you go to uni together, or even work, you see them every day. And so there's this like, oh, you're seeing each other every week, you know?
Because even when you're older, proximity is,
yeah,
is quite...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like if you've got people in ends, like you're more likely to see them because they're in the area. But then I'm like, as I get older, I'm like, I actually don't have that much time to be doing that, especially like for me, my priority is my family, to see my family.
And when I have obligation.
Yeah, and when I have free time, it's normally, okay, I need to go see my parents, really, is like top of the list. And I just thought, what if we just normalized that, see regular contact with friends, is seeing each other once a year. We also don't do like long conversations on WhatsApp or anything like that. We might do the odd voice note and just be like, hey, how you doing? But I'm also not like a WhatsApp friend person. Like, I don't do long combos on WhatsApp. At most, I'll do like 3 voice notes and that's it. And I just think actually if we would have a lot less sort of pressure in friendships and stuff like that if we just made it normal to just have a catch up once a year.
Yeah, so I really like that one.
Yeah, so that's mine. So especially with the pandemic and stuff, I've been thinking that when you're out and I was at work, it's a lot easier to be like, oh, after work I'll go to like Oxford Street or Tottenham Court Road and we'll meet for coffee or whatever it is. But now, like with lockdown and working from home and everything, I feel like you're having to be a lot more intentional when you're you're leaving the house to like the sole purpose is to go and meet this person. Whereas before it was like something you did on the way home, or even like I was thinking about how some people I'd only see them at events and we'd have a really nice chat at events, we'd get on, we follow each other on social media, but now I'm like, oh, I'm probably not gonna like really see that person. So yeah, my 2 cents this week is normalizing not seeing friends often and that not being a marker of how good your friendship is.
Sorry, for the record, my other child has not entered.
Oh my god, he's got like loads of teeth as well. Do you know what, initially when you started you're underrated, I had like a little bit of a gut reaction and I was like, no, like because I think it's because I've been in the house for like a month by myself and I've got massive cabin fever and I think I've like felt really low and I haven't seen anyone and I just thought to myself, no, like this isn't life, I need to be like out seeing people, blah blah blah. And so I was like, you know, when life returns to normal, I should let that be, like, integrate that back into my routine again, because working from home has been really isolating for me because all my friends live in such different areas of London, right? So note on the proximity thing. I would have to make a real effort to, like, make those trips for myself and see people and maintain that contact. But then as you were talking, I was like, it's not so much trying to carve that as part of your life as it is accepting the reality of what life demands of you and embracing it. Because I think, like, as you get older, and it's something that I've always been really reluctant, I think loads of people are, as you get older, it's not, again, so much your age, but it's your responsibilities. And so you have to just, like, prioritize, essentially. And it feels like a sad reality that, you know, and there are also like really beautiful outcomes of like embracing this new like phase or change or whatever. And I think it's actually puts people on a lot stronger foundations in terms of friendships as well, because everybody's expectations is the same. People, like, if you have multiple friends and you're all seeing them once a year, then you have to section out one a month or something like that.
If you think about, if you've got like say five close friends and then you've got, so for example with my family, I've got my parents' house, I've got my sister's house, I've got three family houses to visit, yeah?
Yeah,
that's like 5, 6, that's 8 people, 8 close people. There's 12 months in a year.
Yeah,
there's 4 weekends in a month, you know, like, you when you start breaking it down, you're like, okay, that's actually that this is what's practical, you know. We're also taking into account doing your laundry, doing your washing up, doing your life admin, doing, you know, just having alone time and going work.
I don't know how I feel about all this stuff that you guys are talking about, you millennials. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm not going to say I disagree or anything like that. There's definitely etiquettes, I would say, to some friendships. Every friendship is different. Some friendships require different things to maintain them. I don't think it's a bad friendship if it can't withstand having to meet once a year. Some friends want to see you more. I want to see some friends more. I think there is almost like, I'm not going to say hierarchy, but some form of categorization when it comes to friendships. Like, there are some friendships for me that are essentially part of my everyday community bubble and part of my everyday support. Right. And yeah, there is definitely, like, I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about one of my friends I saw at the top of my road the other day, and we bump into each other a couple of times. So we bump into, and for us, I feel like there's this thing, like, we don't go out for coffee, we don't go out for dinner, but we stand at the top of our road, it's usually my parents' road, and gas for like half an hour. Like, we stood there in the cold last week and we were talking for a good half an hour and just doing like a life update. Which, and that's the terms of our engagement and terms of our friendship. Whereas there are some friendships where actually we meet every single week, right? For whatever reason it is. And actually, if we were not to meet, it would say something about our friendship, because we rely on each other, we support each other on that level, in that capacity. Obviously, like, there are times where we're going through things and we just, you know, for whatever reason. So, yeah, so it's definitely interesting. And I definitely have those friends that I don't meet as often, and we can't, but I think a lot of it is about priority as well. What is a priority in your life? And friendships are fluid. There may be moments in your life, like summertime, you know, summertime, it's like seasonal.
Summertime, all the friends come out.
Only meet once a year. Actually, you meet on a regs during the summertime, for example, because you can. The structures of life, capitalism, don't even let us have proper friendships.
But that's the thing, like, it's not about saying, oh, I see this friend once a week, do I now see them once a year? It's just about normalizing that there is a friend, like, you know, because it's normalizing that if there are friendships that aren't regular friendships, that's okay, that's still a friendship. And like you know, me and my friend's called Ajira, me and Ajira have been friends for, like, you know, 7 years now. And over the 7 years, after having worked together and seen each other every week, I'm like, that's actually a really solid friendship. We still maintained it.
But you know, those friendships like Ijiro, a couple of your, I'm not going to shout them out because I'm like, you said her name, you just said mine. But a couple of your friends, they are rooted in seeing each other every day. They're like school friends, uni friends, whatever. You actually still had that time. You had that intense period where you saw each other all the time. And now it can withstand you guys seeing each other like once a year. I think the foundation still always needs to be there in some capacity.
Some people, they go from every day, and if it's not every day, it's nothing, like, they can't, that friendship can't exist, that friendship can't thrive.
There are things that, you know, this etiquettes of how we deal with our friends, how we are with our friends, but there's also a space of, actually, if one of my friends is not messaging, like, the group, like, we have got WhatsApp groups, for a considerable period of time, I'm not going to say they're like, well, she don't care about us, something's up. Something's up, right? And I'll go and message her and be like, sis, you're right, you've been a little bit quiet, sorry. And more often than not, they'll literally be like, you know what, I'm doing a uni thing, I'm really busy.
Yeah, there's all, that's the, you can never assume, you can't assume that it's like something about you. It's normally something about them and something they're going through.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, you know, whenever I get, like, I message them and they're like, they reply, like, literally less than 24 hours later, and they're like, oh, so sorry for the reply. I'm always like, who hurt you? Because, like, that's not a late reply. For me, a late reply is like a year later. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that is too much for me, 1 year.
No, but a late, I think also that, and I know we've spoken about this, Sarah, before, like, the WhatsApp expectations, like, you shouldn't feel scared to open your WhatsApp because someone's going to be like, I've messaged you, blue tick, blah, blah, blah. For me, I literally have no expectations of, like, if I message this person, if they don't, and if they don't get back to me, just, and if it's something important, or if it's something that you needed, or you're asking a question, just drop a message and say, hey, just wanted to check if whatever, you know. But if someone is not replying to, hey, how are you, and it's taking them a long while, first point of call is not, you're not being proper friend to me. Do you know what I mean?
You know, obviously amid this conversation, you actually might be the toxic person. If you are continuing to be flaking, you're not honouring and respecting your friendships, and there isn't kindness on your part as well in terms of like honouring a relationship that you have built, then that also has to be seen too. It's not just the other person, right? Like we always say, relationships are two ways. So I think that, you know, the thing for all of this is check yourself, like check how you're moving. If you are that person that's not responding to people, or you're that person that's calling up people like, hey, where you been? You know, why aren't you responding?
If you ever say to me, oh, where you been, stranger? You're not my friend. You're not my friend anymore.
Yeah, I just think that we've been fed a lot of misinformation on how to navigate friendships. And actually, it's quite intuitive and personal. Like, and you know what your boundaries are and expectations are with that person. And the only time, like as individual friendships, and the only time that it ever starts to get tense or toxic is if you're betraying your boundaries or expectations, or they are with theirs. So yeah, I really like that whole conversation about normalizing.
Okay, I've got a really nice simple one to off the bat, as they say, off the bat. So sisters of Islam. So this was a really simple one because it's something that I do and I thought I would share. But what is overrated adult books, and how we should actually revisit children's books, in essentially, to inspire good living, and just revisiting classics as well. And I wanted to share this book because it's so good, and there are a lot of information books out there that are aimed at children, but they give you such a good understanding of whatever matter it is. Like, there's a lot of books about the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that are aimed at children, but actually if you want to kind of do like a deep, you know, delve in quickly into the Prophet Muhammad's, peace be upon him's life, and look into like the history of his life, those are really good books to begin with. Like, they at least allow you to map and route, you know, what the Prophet was doing at different times, when he was in Mecca, when he was in Medina, and then going on to like deeper literature, because then it's almost like, okay, so you need the basics, and now you want to go into the kind of the revelations, the meanings, and all of that stuff. So especially even for the deen, I would go, even the Salah books for children, really good, really good. If you're trying to get on the Salah, actually go for the children's books, in terms of like getting to the basics of it. I'm going to show you another book as well. So this book is a book about Mansa Musa and the Empire of Mali. It's a children's book, right? So the Mansa book is for kids, and I started reading it aloud to them, but actually I was quite interested, and it has got quite a lot of detail, so I think they're a little bit old for it, but after I have read it, I can relay it back to them. And then my absolute favorite, which I think is actually a really, really wonderful gift as well, can I read it to you?
Yeah,
guys, just like a lovely pages.
Yeah.
So it's The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. Has anyone read it?
It's really nicely illustrated.
Such a wonderful book, guys, right? So, and I've read it quite a few times.
Yeah.
When you're feeling a bit low, actually, it's a really nice book to revisit. Sometimes you don't need some deep spiritual book to, you know what I mean? Sometimes actually you just need a little. So this is near the end of the book, right? What's your best discovery? Asked the mole. That I am enough, said the boy. Oh. I've realized why we are here, whispered the boy. For cake, asked the mole. To love, said the boy, and to be loved, said the horse. What do we do when our hearts, the boy? We wrap them with friendship, shared tears, and time till they wake, hopefully, and happy again. Do you have any other advice, asked the boy? Don't measure how valuable you are by the way you are treated, said the horse. I always remember you matter, you're important, and you are loved, and you bring to this world things that no one else can. Home isn't always a place, is it? Thank you.
That's beautiful. You know what? That is a fantastic one. Fantastic. I tell you, some of my greatest moral lessons have come from children's books, like, and also they have stuck with me. We're going on a bear hunt. Boy, I think about that at least a couple of times a week. Can't go over it, can't go under it, you have to go through it. What's that teaching about life?
And I just wanted to recommend, there's also a movie on Netflix. It's called The Little Prince. Has anyone watched it?
Yes, that's one of my favourite books ever.
Tell me what, one takeaway from it.
Mama.
Oh, here we go. My kids want to be involved.
Never told us about that.
Did she?
When you went to a house, that was the first time you watched it.
Just take the credit nap, isn't it?
There's the kids thing, especially for Islamic knowledge, 100%. There's a book, I'll drop it in the link in the chat, and it's called 101 Sahabiyat Stories and the Wars. And again, it's about, it's a kids book.
I know that book because we've got it. But
yeah, and again, like, to find the adult version of that, and to be, and it's also a thing of like, you want to be very, very frank. You want to be able to get the knowledge and a starter guide.
Yeah.
And have to go, because I've got books which are like the adult versions, and I'm like, I'm looking at them because they've been sitting there for a while, and I've only got through like a couple of the chapters or a couple of the pages.
The story is actually getting the children's book is a shout. It's a shout.
And also, what I was going to say is, for stories of the prophets, going on YouTube and the kids' YouTube videos.
Oh, not the ones with the bunnies, though. Actually,
I feel like it breaks it down to like, what's the core story? What's the key things we're meant to learn from these stories? Yeah. And then you can like go forward and like learn more. And I think kids' resources really, especially for if you're like trying to learn more about Islam and different factors and stuff like about the Sahaba and Sahabiyat and things like that, they are really, really good resources, because it just cuts to, okay, what are we trying to get from this?
Yeah, absolutely. That was such a good overrated.
Normalizing actually that, you know, the art of storytelling, for example, it isn't age dependent. I feel like, you know, if I listen to a story, if you listen to a story, we will all take a different message from it. So you know, even Spot the Dog, there were some valuable lessons.
What was that one?
Spot the Dog wasn't he the big yellow one?
Hiding, wasn't it the flat book?
Yeah, the big yellow dog with the brown spots.
It's
very cute, yeah. But I just think as well, mentally, especially when you're going through a difficult time, there's something about children's books and just, I don't know, taking you back to that moment and mindfulness of, I don't know, experience.
I mean, that excerpt that you read was like a poem.
I mean, that's just the end of the book. So imagine.
Where it said your value is not based on how you're treated. Like, what a revolutionary.
I will say about children's books, they do feel like more of a journey, because they break it down and they make it so simple. Yeah. And you're able to like visualize, like there's not as many complexities in there that have to take you on like 15 tangents.
Not random plot lines, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's focus on the one plot, what we're trying to get.
Yeah. I just want to share one more bit, right? There's a bit where the mole has to save the fox, and the boy's like, I'm not afraid, said the mole. If I wasn't caught, and then the fox says, if I wasn't caught in the snare, I'd kill you, said the fox. And then the mole says, if you stay in the snare, you will die, said the mole. So the mole chewed through the wire with his tiny teeth. And then he says, one of our greatest freedoms is how we react to things. Damn!
Oh, boy.
That would, honestly, Selena, that was one of the best overrateds you've ever done. And I know I've said that before.
She I really well, did that Sarah. Now.
Honestly, I just am so...
You know what? As soon as I wrote it down, I was like, oh, these lot are going to think I've come with like a quick hash 2 minutes.
No.
You know what it is? It's the headlines you give it. Adult books are overrated. Okay, then.
There you breathe. That
you know
was
what
a
it is? You know, just slaps any headline and then you're like, what? That doesn't really
because I sense. Formulate what I want to say, and then I'm like, oh, where does this fit?
You know what? Do you know what that overrated was? It was this like the salt, fat, acid equivalent of like a really good meal. It had everything. Fantastic. That's Hall of Fame overrated.
Shella, you got another one in you, or was that?
Yeah, I do actually. I do, and I'm thinking, do I go really religious, and is it Sister Selena on the podcast, or Auntie Selena? Because there's a difference. You know what? I'm going to go for Sister Selena, and I'm going to go in, because it's something that I've held back from the beginning of this podcast, and something that I've not treaded on directly, and it's just got to the point where, you know what? I want to leave this world in part
with goodness. Your chest.
I want to say it with my chest, yeah. But what is overrated is your opinion. Your opinion. You know I'm coming, isn't it, this week? And I come in peace. I come with love. I come as a sister. And it's something that I've observed over the years, mainly on social media, right? Your opinion on a ruling in Islam does not matter, sis. Your opinion on a ruling in Islam does not matter, okay? We really need to stop listening and practicing this deeply wrong and misguided act of inserting our opinion and feelings and projecting our feelings onto something that is faux, mm-hmm. or where there is a clear chain of narration or very clear statement in our deen on an issue. I reckon you already know what I'm talking about, and for a while I have wanted to tackle this, but I felt somewhat nervous, you know, when it comes to like religious matters and ficky stuff and things are fun. But I'd rather leave this world sharing truth than falsehood, and I feel like there's way too many voices talking about this is how I feel and these are my feelings on this opinion.
My truth
and all of this stuff. And listen, sis, we can talk about our truths, we can share our feelings, we can share our opinions. I'm not silencing that. Mm-hmm. I think we've had some really necessary and needed discussion around specific topics, and I'm struggling now to actually talk about what it is. But and the same breath of be careful of what you're saying and what you're sharing, be extremely careful about who you're listening to, about certain matters, and who we seek knowledge from, right? I'm going to get straight into it. So is there a bit of maybe a grey area around how we wear it, how far we cover it? There are some narrations around actually wore during specific times in response to it. There might be a bit of a grey area around that. Mm-hmm. Can it be a struggle? Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Is it something that I've struggled with? Yes, of course. Is it something I've worn my whole life? No, it isn't. Is it a test? Yes. And tests affect us all differently, and we respond to them all differently. But we really need to keep inserting our opinion into what has been commanded by Allah. Is it a struggle? Yes, of course. And the thing is, with any test, right, there will be different struggles. And I think it's really good that we're actually able to be open about talking to them. You know, recently there was a blogger, Chinete, she was talking about hair loss and the difficulties around that, and she was giving tips, and I think that's really good, because then some of us can take those tips and be like, actually perhaps it's a change of material, perhaps it's looking after our hair. And those conversations are good. They're needed when they bring out goodness, right? And then it strengthens us in wearing the hijab, for, you know, whatever it is. Because sometimes you need to be like, you know what, me too, sis, I really struggle to wear it. Okay, so what do, sort of vibes. You know, if we take, for example, salah is we have to pray 5 times a day. It's fine. Is it sometimes the inconvenience based on location? Like the other day I was in a muddy field and it was like, I really need to pray. If I don't pray asr, Maghrib is going to come in before I know it, then, you know. Does that mean because I feel like it's an inconvenience, I now make it a not farther than I don't do it, and there is some, you know, back and forth on whether I need to do it because of the location? Actually, if we know our deen, we know the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he did salah without unmounting from his camel. He did salah even in battle, standing up. And obviously, I'm in the field, I'm not in battle, but if it means that I'm going to miss my Maghrib and, you know, there's going to have a graver impact, then perhaps there's a way that I can do it. So I just feel like recently, over the course of the last few years, we've started to take opinion and feelings as far over what is actually relayed in our religion. And it's a very, very dangerous thing to do. Yeah. It's a very dangerous space to enter. And you know what? I'm gonna have to go for it. There have been bloggers that have taken the hijab off, and the way that they have approached it, they have approached it in that manner, where it is almost stating that their opinion and feeling is more important than what is commanded by Allah. And, you know, I'm really asking you not to paint me in a brush where I'm being unmerciful or I'm being unkind, but it's just some of it. I'm just seeing these things, and I know, like, young sisters that are watching these things, listening to these things, and they will take that opinion and feeling, and tomorrow they will start inserting that into everything, how I feel about salah, how I feel, and before you know it, you become doubtful about your deen.
I think from what I've seen as well, it's about, you can talk about how you're feeling and you can talk about, you know,
course.
That side of it. But sometimes it has felt that it is ignoring that it is fired. Then and someone was saying to me that, why can't we have the conversation around, I'm struggling. I'm just struggling with that at the moment. I'm not wearing it at the moment. And that's that. But I have felt that it has been from a perspective of almost like, it's not actually something we need to do.
Sis, you do you. Yeah, sis, do you. There's these generic statements that keep being dropped in some of these videos, some of these conversations. Sis, do you. You know, whatever you're feeling. And sometimes I'm not feeling to wear the hijab. You know, I'm sorry to be the auntie. I really am. But I'm. It's coming from a place of I guess, care. You know, I just want to say, like, be very mindful. And the thing is, you know, one thing about human nature, if we want to do something, we'll seek advice from the very people that we need to validate what we want to do.
Yeah.
If I want to eat burgers and chips every day, I'm not about to go to Nafisa and say, I want to eat burgers and chips every day. I'm going to go to someone that's going to enable that behavior. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I want to get healthier, go to the gym, whatever, I'm going to go to Nafisa and be like, you know what? I really want to do, and she'll give me the advice. So that also is a reflection of keep good company.
Absolutely.
Yeah, not keep company that is good for laughs and jokes and nice makes, you know, all of that sort of stuff, which is important. Your friends, your religious friends should also come with jokes and banter. But I'm not saying, you know, but have good company as well. And we've emphasized it so many times, but have good company online. You know, we live online a lot. Have all because it's like this weird space. If you have good company online as well, yeah, sis, even offline, online, have good company. In fact, you can have the best company online. You know, I've been really, really mindful of who I'm watching, captions I'm engaging with, stories that I've clicked through. I'm not engaging with anything that is really bad for me in terms of a spiritual place. If for me, this is me and my nafs, yeah. If sis is constantly posing in selfies and outfits that she's looking fly, it's not me being jealous. It's just me knowing my nafs and thinking, you know what? Maybe I could dress like that. Maybe I could, you know, if I just took off my hijab because my hair looks fly, I could also look like that. And it's not me being jealous. It's me knowing my heart and me knowing where I stand in the realm of consuming all of this sort of content. Yeah. So I choose not to engage with that. Right, so be mindful, sis. Yeah, and I honestly, I know some people will not have liked what I've talked about today, but I just felt like today was the time to talk about it. And if I die tomorrow, inshallah, you know, for the sisters that are looking at the other sisters, our friends, our family who are taking off the hijab, we also have to be mindful how we engage. If suddenly you see someone that's taken off their hijab and you come at them like, sis, what's going on? What's happening? Yeah. And again, like, where have you been for the last 6 months? Mm-hmm. You don't know what's happening in the sister's lives for you then to come in. And I'm not saying we don't advise. I'm not saying that at all. But just be mindful how we're all engaging with one another when it comes to things like advice. Like, I've also seen some very nasty comments and nasty narrated commentary on when sisters have taken off the hijab, or perhaps sisters in the community, oh, have you seen that sis, Rara? I said, yeah, but do you know what she's been going through? Do you know what's going on in her life? You can't just go to her and then just advise her for hijab and then step out of her life again. Mm-hmm. Even I wouldn't appreciate if someone just came to me out of nowhere and just be like, yo, you know, what's going on? Why have you taken it off? I'm like, sis, you have not even, like, come to check on me in the matters of my life.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I know I've said perhaps a lot of wrong things, so may Allah forgive us. May Allah forgive me, Nafisa, and Sarah for anything wrong that we have said, inshallah. Like, we want the best to come out of this podcast and for it to be some sort of guide. We assume that audience are those that are seeking to get close to Allah, right? That is always our assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if we have ever said anything offensive or wrong, then, you know, forgive us.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff is making you feel a certain way, you need to check yourself. And I say that with love. You know how I am on this podcast.
Actually ties very well into my other two cents, because it's about hijab and something.
Is this the controversial one that you were getting?
Yes, it is the controversial one.
Okay.
I came across this tweet a very long time ago, like back in August, and I wanted to put it in Muslim Twitter, but it was a thread, so it was just two it wasn't black and white. And to your point, and before that, I totally agree with what you're saying, Shilu, and I think it comes back to a similar conversation we had, Sarah, when we were talking about the interfaith marriage stuff, of like just having that base
level. Sarah, also do a work from home podcast where you spoke about hijab and your own struggles and
it was where I was like, we can say we're struggling but also acknowledge it's Fard, basically. And I think that's the key thing of, and I think that's where I said, like, me not wearing hijab, there's a deficiency in my iman, that like that's how I view it. There's obviously
your personal relationship
I see it as there's something not right, you know. And I think part of that, what I'm hearing from you, Shilu, is like acknowledging that level of like not trying to almost justify the actions by trying to downplay that it is fired.
It's a having a humility within our own self of actually understanding, like, you know what, my salah is shaky, and that is a symptom of something, right? That the outward practices that we have in our deen are actually a symptom. Allah has put them in place in us, I feel, to be like, oh, your salah is shaky, what's up? You know, how can we rectify that? How can we improve it?
I do just want to say something that really quickly that's made me think of, sorry Nafisa, before you go into the rest of your point, but it does make me think that there is, I feel like there is a real deficiency in the Muslim space for discussing these subjects really like thoroughly and really openly. And I say that just because I was reflecting on psychological welfare in the Muslim community as well, because I don't feel like up until maybe 10, 15 years ago, there were even that many institutions that allowed for a space for Muslims to seek Islamic counselling and Islamic therapy. And I say Islamic counselling and therapy because it, time and time again with this conversation, it comes back to the lack of infrastructure we have, because I really feel like if many had a place to go to discuss these things at length, to discuss their struggles and not feel judged, they'd be able to hash them out a lot more, because actually this requires a lot of self-work. And if the only people you are allowed to talk to about it is either social media or your direct circle, and
this goes back to having good company, I think it's really important to cultivate spaces where you can thrash out things, doubtful matters in your deen, you know. I have like spaces like that, alhamdulillah, and those spaces weren't just like, it's not a membership club. I did seek those places. I have a group, we are friends, and you know, I feel like there's an understanding that we are friends for the sake of Allah. We met and we came together because we wanted to start up a halakha. And we've said sometimes that if we if we met each other, we're all like different age ranges, like massively, like you know, once it's like, I think she's like 9 years younger than me, we would have met at school or university or you know, the normal places where you would like meet each other. We met out of the need of, like, we were mums that really needed some grounding in our deen. So we met for the sake of Allah. And that friendship has continued. And that space is a space where I can talk about those things.
But, you know, not everyone has that. And even in the meantime, like, trying to, like, for example, I'm thinking, like, if I didn't have any good company right now and I'm struggling with this, this and this in my deen, how do I cultivate good company, build that whole trust? Like, I feel like I'm pitching to listeners and some Muslim community to like some, for there to be this collective like effort to create these very safe spaces that people can go to directly that are not necessarily attached to them. Because I feel like we'd have a lot less confusion and almost like a way of educating people how to discuss these issues as well without co-opting Fard, putting their opinions, trials, or their thoughts on it, and disseminating that for other people to interpret and maybe put on their lives, because that's really, there's like that chain reaction. But I'll stop.
I think this is like that 12 things I struggle to reconcile about Islam as a Muslim woman on Amalia did so well in terms of people really felt seen, because it's like we pretend conversations and gray space and doubt and all its struggles don't exist. We pretend it is like black and white. And while there is a degree of, yes, it is black and white, this is hard, this is not, da da da, the experience of doing the fraud and the experience of doing those acts, there is a lot of gray and there is a lot of need to hold space for the feelings you feel in doing that. And we can't discount that we are humans with feelings and emotions. We are going to go, everyone's going to interact with different things in Islam differently, you know? And I think that is why that piece made so many people feel seen, of like, oh, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one who questions certain things, or I'm not the only one who feels a sense of discomfort or a sense of struggle. And I think it is, you know, it is really important to have company, because that is good, because you can very easily find the company that will tell you the answers that your nafs wants, you know, not what your soul needs, but what your nafs wants. And going into my, oh my God, I'm so shook, but going into my two cents. So like I said, I saw this thread a while ago. It was like back in August. And again, it was from @Sin Seriously, who I mentioned in the Khabib segment. And yes, how sorry you were saying, like, some of these conversations, it feels all or nothing, and there's not enough space for gray or nuance. And Shilu, you're saying, like, with your friendships, you can thrash things out, you can have that conversation of, I'm struggling with X, the answer isn't always, okay, just stop doing it, because it's not,
you know what, in those friendships as well, you need to be prepared to hear things that you don't want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. And what @Sin Seriously said is, she said, if we didn't falsely make hijab a pillar of a woman's Islam, I think more women would feel comfortable experiencing it in a more fluid manner. There's a lot of wear it right or take it off verbiage about it, but women,
I don't like that either.
But women should be able to practice it whenever and however they want. And honestly, I feel like because this tweet includes the word fluid, people have like a knee-jerk reaction of like, you know, it's not about putting it on Monday, taking it off on Tuesday, putting it on Wednesday, taking it off on Saturday, right? And I'll be very honest, when I first saw that tweet, I was like, what do you mean, sis? And this is me as someone who does not wear hijab.
Yeah.
But then I was like, actually, if, and she was like, we've become obsessed with what we deem symbols of piety and controlling women. Mm-hmm. And it goes to
that. We are meant to be the poster girl for Islam in the West, right? And there's this big pressure on us, because especially when it comes to, I'm gonna say, fashion bloggers or whatever it is, the reason why the community come for them is because you've got these men like, no, but you were repping us. You were repping us. Yeah, she may have been repping us in certain spaces, but she's also repping herself and having her own relationship with her religion. Mm. You know, it sounds like I'm contradicting my first point.
And this is the thing, it's like you said, like, Muslim women are expected to be this poster girl, meanwhile you've got Khabib in knickers fighting in a...
I like Khabib, we've got bare men, like, or scholars or sheikhs doing the most when it comes to violating women, but we're talking about a sister who's showing an ankle.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing, when I felt I had to really sit on this tweet of like, more women would feel comfortable experiencing it in a more fluid manner.
Yeah.
And I, like, Sarah, obviously me and you don't wear hijab, but it made me think, like, actually, if there wasn't the pressure, like, me and Sarah, like, I feel like for us it's like you put it on and then that's it, you've made
yeah.
it
yeah yeah yeah
head, you know,
that's part of the fear of, like, yeah. even for me anyway, part of the fear of putting it on is the fact that that's a lifelong
Yeah. Hijab will start in a fluid manner. It might, for me, it started with just wearing hijab to the mosque, because I was like, oh, I'm gonna wear it to the mosque. I'm gonna wear it to, before it was like, then I was wearing it after the mosque. Mm. You know what I mean? And that, for me, the journey, actually, now looking back, it was fluid, but I wouldn't say, oh, I had a fluid journey. You know what I mean?
It was fluid, but it wasn't broadcasted on social media, so no one knew it was fluid.
Yeah.
And I feel like now,
because, you know, you have a part-time life on social media, for most people, it's like then that part-time life, they also know that your hijab is fluid, and then that brings into question, you know, the amount of times I've seen like people who don't even have a big following being like, oh, I just want to address my hijab situation. And they're not influencers, they're not bloggers, but they you feel compelled to come on stories and be like, oh, I just want to address my hijab situation. Blah blah. But I'm like, you wouldn't come on and be like, oh, I just want to address that I've not been praying Fajr at the moment. So you might see me, you know, snapping my breakfast at 9 p.m. But that's that, you know, I have been struggling. You know, you wouldn't do that. And it goes back to like what this sister was saying about the hijab becoming this pillar and this symbol and this it is an obsession. I'm sorry, it is an obsession. And that's not negating absolutely the conversation of it being fard, but it is an obsession. It is an obsession. And I think that obsession has actually done a lot of harm to Muslim women and their relationship with the hijab, including people like me and you, Sarah, who do see it as an all or nothing thing. Because, you know, especially for someone like me, I do use my social media. And I don't want to be on social media with hijab on Monday and no hijab on Friday because I'm trying to like get to grips with it and find my feet and blah, blah, blah. And I also don't want to feel like I need to be run off social media for that either. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely.
And you know what? The parts of our faith, though, we have to practice privately,
But how do you practice that privately?
This is what I was going to say, is that understanding and accepting that human beings work on a foundation of optics. And they will act on optics. And unfortunately, like, because we look at like the optics of the Khabib situation, is that he is this emblem of Islamic masculinity, you know, reviving like the Sahaba and their big muscles. And, you know, it's because you can see optics playing out. And I just understand that that's how people are operating, because I feel like that personal understanding, that personal acceptance, would alleviate a lot of that pressure. Like, but you know, you see those people that run off into the middle of nowhere and build their house up, right? It's because of how people view things. It's how people have created society to view things and put that on you. So, you know, I think really it's about a very individual journey of understanding how people work and how you need to operate, really.
I think we're talking a lot about terms of engagement on various things that we like in this podcast, like God, I'm revealing way too much. But you know, there was one day that I was running around the flat trying to sort out the kids, trying to sort out myself, and I said to myself, I did wudu and said, I'm going to do my fajr. I had a one cup. I left the house, I got to the park where we were meant to be, and literally as soon as I stepped a foot in the park, I was like, I haven't done Fajr. And I had a moment there where I was like, I need to either do Fajr now in front of everybody and let everybody know that I hadn't woken up, I hadn't done it and I hadn't prioritized it, or I don't do it because I don't want anyone to see all of that. And then I just did it. I said, sorry guys, I just need to pray before we start. And I prayed. And then a sister, like really innocently, she was like, what? No, Naf, it was a this happened at a taekwondo tournament, right, once, and I prayed in some changing room, and then the brother, he thought I was praying for my kids, like I was doing a special extra prayer for my children. He's like, when I finished, he's like, oh, you're praying for their success? And I was like, obviously I made dua for my children in the salah, but I was like, no, I didn't want to lie, so I was like, no, I prayed Fajr. And then he got confused. He's like, oh, but Fajr is a time. Tell me what time it was. I was like, yeah, I know, but I missed it, so I'm trying to make up for it. And I know he did not rate me, he did not. But it was either do that Fajr to the best of ability I could in the fact that I, you know, or abandon it entirely because I had the gaze on me, right? But I had to just keep going in my mistakes.
So hard, it's so hard.
I feel like it's a metaphor for a lot of what we discussed as well.
So Sarah, I feel like we've got a little bit of news for the podcast. You know what? Before I tell you that, I also want to let you know that I put on my stories how we like get listeners from lots of different countries.
Yeah.
My DMs, guys, it was so cute. I had people going, hey, I'm the listener from South Africa. Hey, I listen from Indonesia. hey, I'm from Australia. Hey, I'm from Canada. Hey, I'm from Nigeria. It was the cutest thing ever.
Do you know what? I can imagine, because when we only used to be able to see our statistics on SoundCloud, and it would only just have the country flag, and it was just the number. So it's nice to, like, because at least with like the right editorial, you know where people are writing from, you know that community. But with the podcast listeners, to our detriment, it's always been a number, and it's nice to know that people are like personally reaching out and actually listening. It's like someone was listening in Nigeria. That's so mind-blowing.
Even like I was doing a panel on Friday, and Ibrahim, who runs Guap magazine, black-owned media, he was like, you know, when I was starting out, Guap, Galdem and Amalia all started like 5 years ago. And Ibrahim was like, when I was starting out, there weren't that many blueprints for black-owned media. Yeah. And then the host was like, but now you guys have to deep that you're all blueprints for other people. Mm-hmm. And I deeped and I was like, whoa, like there's people that are able to start, whether it's their podcast, whether it's their online platform, whether it's even a social page, and they're able to be like, oh, what do they do over there? How do they make it work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what an honor and what a privilege to be able to be in that space, you know?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like, I think there is that growing awareness that I don't think I'll ever be a part of something like this again, where it is like, and you know, that was meaningful as part of my deen. It was a way that I could worship, which, you know, you don't get many opportunities to do that. It had that whole aspect of working with really amazing people, and you know, also having the opportunity to meet a community that I had always prayed to have. But okay, so my announcement and the reason we're doing things a little bit different today is because I am leaving Amalia. I'm leaving the Amalia podcast. I'm leaving the Amalia company after nearly 3 years, mashallah, being with Selena and Nafisa, and helping to start this podcast, which, mashallah, like Nafisa, you just said as well, it's like, hopefully will be the blueprint for many, many amazing projects in the future, and quite a legacy and something that I'll never forget, has having been a huge part of my life. And I think... I'm gonna cry, and I can feel it coming.
It's in the throat.
But you know, I just want to put a note out to the listeners. I think I probably will do this again at some point, because it's not going to be my last episode. I'm going to be on the next two-set episode.
You still got Sarah's dreamy voice for a couple more episodes, so we thought we'd be into the process.
You're gonna be like, oh, has she gone? But meanwhile, there's like some anthology episodes coming up for the next 6 weeks. I'm still going to be on some pre-recorded episodes, but I will no longer be doing any live recordings with girls. And this is the penultimate live episode. And I just wanted to thank every single listener that enjoyed and listened and gave our podcast some time, and who gave us feedback, and everybody who I've worked with and reached out to, you know, as part of this real amazing project that we put on with the podcast, and mashallah to see it go to such success as well. And I know that it will only go to greater heights.
Award-winning
podcast, alhamdulillah, it's something I never ever foresaw ever being a part of, and I'm just so privileged to have done it with you both and with the community. And thank you, like, I know that this will only take off and become bigger and greater, and there will be more stories and more voices on this podcast, and I'm so just so happy to have been even a little bit of a part of that. So thank you all. And as a kind of like sentimental tribute to Two Cents, I have decided to do something a little different this week and pick up some of the old subjects that we have talked about and kind of like pit them against each other, see if we still stand by them. I'm gonna like not only look at mine but also Selena and Nafisa's as well, and see if we all still agree with all of the stuff we've talked about. There's some things I definitely regret. So But the first one I would like to contest is the myth of power dressing. So I think Nafisa brought this one to the table as something being overrated. And I would like to contest it and bring it back and say I actually don't think it is overrated at all. And I want to unpack this. So yeah, the myth of power dressing, I'd say in the context of working from home especially, this one has proven absolutely, like, what's the word, detrimental to my well-being and my work well-being. When I was in the early stages of lockdown, I was living with a friend, and the difference between us both when we approached work is that she would get up every morning, have a shower, get changed into some badass black uniform, put on her makeup, did her hair, got ready for work, and had a full day of like smashing her goals. I, on the other hand, would wake up, do a little bit of admin in my pajamas, put my headphones on, go for a recording with you two, and then that would be the rest of the day. Looking back at moments in my life where I have dressed up for something, it has really influenced my confidence levels for that day, and also my degree of optimism, and therefore increased my capacity to enjoy whatever I'm doing, or to really thrive with whatever I'm doing. So yeah, that is my contested overrated for this week. Yes, Nafisa.
So I'd just like to say I really understand where you're coming from. However, that wasn't actually my point. My point was that, do you know what? A couple of weeks ago, I think I was like going for a walk or something, and I looked really good, mashallah. You know, I looked like I was in a fashion show. And I often dress like I am in my own movie. And the reason that I do that is because I'm like, especially in lockdown, yeah, but generally in life, you can't wait for an invite to dress your best, you know, like you can't wait for that friend's wedding or that award ceremony or whatever goes on in your life for you to look your best. And so for me, often I have moments where I'm like, I'm just gonna look glamorous and look amazing today, just for even though I'm going to Sainsbury's, whatever it is. And I think for me, the whole power dressing thing was about that power dressing not being the blueprint of the two-piece suit, but the power is understanding where your power comes from. Like your power might come from wearing bright colours. Yeah. Your power might come from wearing something really casual clothes, but like really funky trainers. Mm-hmm. And so understanding that the because power dressing is often seen as like a two-piece suit. Mm-hmm. And so for me, power dressing is just like looking good, basically. And I think there is such a psychological impact of looking good. Like often as in my work from home routine, I do get up and I like put on makeup and I like wear something, and I also to use that as opportunity to wear something I wouldn't wear outside, and I mean in terms of covering. So like I wouldn't wear a plunge neck outside of my house, right? I'd wear a polo neck, and I've used work from home to also wear things that I wouldn't wear because it's not covered enough for me.
Yeah,
and even that, like it's like a sense of like,
that's so true. I never
that sense
of, yeah, I never thought about it that way as well, how so many people must be exercising the freedom.
It's yeah, and that's the thing, because sometimes like some of the outfits I wear, I've tailored it to make it modest, to like, you know, I love plunge neck tops, I love plunge neck jumpsuits, I think they look amazing. And I always pair them with a polo neck when I leave my house, and I think it still looks amazing. But if I wasn't someone that wasn't covering, best believe that plunge neck would be on show. I would have my boobs out right in your face. But and I, you know, it's like working with that. And I think sometimes like my wardrobe is like, actually I can also wear it in a way that's not covered. And that's what I've actually taken a lot of advantage of with work from home, of like, I can wear this jumpsuit today and my back's out, it's a plunge neck, and no one's gonna see me, but I see me. And
yeah, definitely. It's that, it's making the myth of power dressing or power dressing a bit meta, in that it's so much more than it. Obviously, yes, it influences, like everything you've just said there, it makes you feel a kind of way, but it's looking at it as like you exercising your freedom to be comfortable in your own space and to live up to your own expectations and have the best of both worlds, essentially, you know, being home and outside and blah, blah, blah. and just doing what you can with the resources you have to make you feel the best possible version of yourself that you can on any given day.
Really liked that one, Sarah.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for bringing it up over a year ago.
Huh? Because Sarah is leaving us soon, we've decided to give you extra 2 cents over this next couple of weeks. So do hold tight. And in the meanwhile, if you would like to send your love letters to Sarah, email hello@amalia.com. That is a real email address, hello@amalia.com. You could also...
sharing it, someone said.
And also, you could also leave a review on iTunes, because I think you'll all agree that having Sarah on the podcast has been a wonderful addition to everyone's day, everyone's week, hearing her voice, whether it's Small Talk, 2 cents, Anthology, that calm and smoothing, dreamy tone has been an absolute delight to have Sarah. I can't say we're going to replace you because you're irreplaceable.
Oh, so it's going to be savage in DM and say, can I take Sarah's spot?
Everyone's going to try and pretend to be you. And it's like, you can't, I'm sorry, you can't be Sarah. Like, you just cannot be Sarah.
But eventually, imagine if it was like, nobody cares. Move on.
And then now people be like, I'm going to miss Sarah's voice.
No, whatever. Literally, there's going to be such...
You're going to get love letters coming to you, Sarah.
No. Also, I had one more thing to speak to your lovely tone and voice. Sarah, who you might have heard drop into the Work From Home podcast that we just had, she messaged me and she was like, her eldest daughter, who is, how old is she, Shalor? 6, 7?
Yeah.
She was putting her to sleep. And Sarah normally puts her to sleep with the Quran. And her daughter actually turned around and said, I don't want to listen to the Quran. I want to listen to the Malia podcast. And so she actually fell asleep listening to the dulcet tones of the Malia podcast.
Wow. You know, guys.
And you know what? Alhamdulillah, we talk about the deen.
Calm collaboration soon.
How cute is that? Youngest listener.
Oh, wish.
So just to let you know, this just to reaffirm to the listeners, we know this is very sad news, but you will hear Sarah again on the podcast, and we will be doing a goodbye on that podcast. So if there's anything you'd like to tell Sarah, please let us know at hello@amalia.com or on the iTunes reviews. Thank you.
We'll leave that there then. Assalamu alaikum, everybody, and assalamu alaikum to our listeners, and we will see you on the next.
Wow. Well, welcome to love.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.